Welcome to the Tower. This is the first talk. This is Embedded Debian by the man who needs only one name, Wookie. If you're watching this at home, the IRC channel to submit questions to is /DC6-talks-tower on Freenode. If you're watching the wrong stream, you might want /DC6-talks-hacklab to talk to Abba and his Python boff. Right, without much further ado, Wookie.
Hello. So, yes, this is supposed to be a boff rather than a talk, so I'm not quite sure how to play this, but as there's lots of people that don't recognise, I think I should cover some of the ground of where we're at with Embedded Debian at the moment, and then open it up to talk about whatever people want to discuss. So I'll do that by basically talking about the Extra Majura meeting, because that covers everything we're currently doing. We went at the behest of the Spanish government to spend 5 days having a big session in Extremadura, which was a fine event. We got quite a lot of people together, all the ones who are actually doing stuff, and made some real progress on all the things we've been meaning to do for years. So the first of those is Scratchbox 2. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Scratchbox. It's a cross-compiling environment, which, by means of devious techniques, lets applications think they're natively building, but actually cross-build them, so you can do things faster and not have to worry about all the things you haven't built yet, which, particularly for Debian with its wide range of dependencies, makes it much easier to get started building from scratch. The problem with it is that you actually need a great big 400 meg pile of stuff because of all the documentation tools and things that stuff build depends on. And keeping that up to date is a bit of a pain. So Scratchbox 2 is a mechanism to actually use the standard Debian packages but still perform the magic sandboxing so that stuff works, and they prove that a scheme using, well, there are two possible schemes to basically intercept calls to open and all the file calls via glibc and send them to other binaries. So if you actually wanted to run an ARM version of something, it would go off and go, you should want this version over here, really. So it would run different files from the actual paths presented, and as a mechanism for configuring all that. So that's possible, and hopefully will be available to use maybe this year, depending on how fast people work on it. Nship over there can tell you all the sordid details. We also worked on cross tools. At the moment, there aren't a standard set of cross compilers in Debian, which is a bit of a pain. So anybody who wants to cross-build for ARM needs to build themselves a toolchain. So we've been maintaining some at mdebian.org, but it's hard work keeping them up to date because people keep uploading new versions of the compiler every 3 weeks. And so we have to rebuild all the cross versions so that they still install on testing and unstable. We've been doing that. But it looks like we've now persuaded the powers that be that we can have a set of common cross compilers in Debian. Obviously, you don't want every conceivable version of SH3 to MIPSL cross compiler because they're all nearly all useless. But all the ones that run on fast machines that people actually have, like x86, AMD64, PowerPC, two common targets, will be in main, which will make life a lot easier because you just apt-get whatever cross-compiler you want. So we have patches that work. We just have to actually put those in. And if anyone's volunteering to do that work this week, that would be marvellous, because then it might actually happen. I've also been working on SH3 cross tools. A guy called Jonas something or other, Meyer, has got all enthused about making the SH3 cross build stuff work and has been doing a fine job. So since last year, I don't know if any of you came to see me witter on about embedded Debian at the previous DebConf. We had a lot of plans and schemes, but not much in the way of actual working stuff. And that's changed enormously this year. So we now have two working distributions. There's Slind and Stage. So Slind's been done by a couple of guys at Siemens in St. Petersburg. And that uses the depackage cross mechanism in Debian to cross-build tools properly in the autoconf way. It uses a BSD installer, and the only bit that isn't beautiful is there's no real way with the current way that Debian's install scripts work to tell if you've just built a whole load of stuff on your build machine and you now have the target chroot, it's difficult to run the scripts on that chroot without them going and affecting your build system, because there's no way of telling a postints that its root's moved. So what they did was actually copy the postints over to the target and then, and well, NFS mount it on the target and then run the scripts there, which is neat. But the problem is that if your target doesn't have Ethernet, this mechanism is no use to you for getting things actually configured. Scratchbox is actually another way of solving this problem. It can pretend that the root has moved for your purposes, and thereby deal with the problem of running install scripts, which was something I hadn't realised until recently. So that's a really cool feature. So Slind is good. There's about 40-odd packages done. You can build things with it. It supports ARM, MIPS, I can't remember what else. PowerPC, I think. A set of common targets, basically. We also have Stage, which uses the is an extension of the Stag scheme, which I detailed last year, using an MDebian directory instead of a Debian directory, with changed rules and PostScript and scripts and dependencies. But it uses Scratchbox to do the actual cross-compiling. So you know, the whole cross-compiling thing is just solved, and you make it Scratchbox's problem. And again, there's 40-odd packages done. And one useful thing that happened at the Extremadura conference was that we realized that one of the advantages of the Stage mechanism with a separate directory is that you can have an arbitrary number of these directories. So it's easy to do. So you normally have a Debian directory with the rules and build information in it. Then you have an MDebian directory with the embedded version, but you can also have a my favorite widget directory. And all you do is change this one variable, Debian dir, and that will override the normal rules with your rules. So it makes it very easy to personalize the distribution for your particular purpose, which people usually find they want to do for any given embedded project. So what that means, in fact, is that you can just put the Slind rules in a directory called Slind, and Slind becomes a subset of merely one particular flavor of this mechanism. So they realize that, in fact, they are the same project, really. And we're in the process of merging the two sets of patches at mdebian.org. And then basically you'll have a choice of whether to build it depackaged cross style or Scratchbox style. In principle, either can work. So that's all jolly good stuff. You can download those and try them now. I'm intending to try and do a build for a board I've brought with me this week. And if anyone else wants to have a play, please come along. Is Ed here? No. So the man who's done all stage work is actually at this conference, but he hasn't got up this morning. We also talked about the ARM EABI transition, which isn't, strictly speaking, part of embedded Debian, but many of the people involved have an interest in that as well. We've got a separate BOF on that, so I shan't cover it at any length now, but basically ARM is changing its ABI generally, not particularly because of Debian, but just because of ARM Limited, really, and the rest of the world. So we're going to have to follow suit at some point, and we've been working out how to do that, which basically is going to be a new ARM architecture, which is different from the old ARM architecture, because trying to move from one to the other is difficult. Other people worked on Debian Installer for various widgets and QEMU, which is the emulator that will is one way of running non-native binaries on your build machine. So I explained about Slind and Stage, their basic differences and commonalities. So that's where we're at. Quite a lot of progress since last year, a lot of stuff happening. There still isn't like an MDebian distribution you can just download for a whole range of targets, but we're getting quite close to that. More people coming along and doing work will obviously speed things up, so anyone who's really enthused is most welcome. So the question really that I was going to talk about today was, now what? The things that became clear from the Extremadura meeting were that the next thing to do is get cross tools in Debian main. I'd like to try and do that this week with a bit of luck. Anyone who's enthused about that sort of thing, please come along, kick my arse, or otherwise help. The Stage and Slind both will benefit from more packages. Obviously, 40 packages is a minimal base system. You get X and some networking and a shell and a few utilities, but nothing terribly exciting. So packaging more packages. For Stage, it's generally pretty much a case of replacing every instance of slash Debian with dollar Debian dir. That gets you a functioning package, and then you can worry about the details and just remove a few bits for installing documentation. We'd like to do some slightly smarter ways of dealing with the metadata. So one of the fundamental things that people want to do with embedded systems is throw away all the docs. You know, it's not complicated. we just don't want them. They're too big, and they take ages to build, and bring in a whole load of dependencies you didn't want. So, and we are working on policy for package maintainers, so that there's a whole load of stuff you can do as a package maintainer, which makes it much easier for the embedded people to build parts of your package or whatever. But of course, people don't know what they should be doing. So we've started some documentation on a few more deb build options, like no docs and no test, which will basically not bother building any docs and not bother running any tests. That would be a huge step forward, just if we had that in most packages. There's also a whole load of stuff about build dependencies. So at the moment, because Debian's always been designed for native builds, there's no concept of dependencies which are actually required on the target as opposed to the build machine. So quite a lot of things build, most of the dependencies are actually on the build machine, but sometimes there's a few things which get run natively during the build. And if we were to improve to segment the dependency lists a bit so that it actually said whether these were things which were supposed to be native packages or supposed to be build architecture packages, that would make our lives a lot easier. But we need to get changes made in the policy to get people to start doing that. And the same principle applies to dependencies which are either runtime or install time. So again, there's a whole load of stuff which is actually only used by the install scripts, for example, update menus. So you don't need that on your target. You only need it at install time, and then you can throw it away again. But obviously, to have a generalized system to do that, we need to know whether this is a dependency that's needed at runtime or only at install time. So again, a bit more segmentation there would improve our lives a great deal. Multi-arch is also related to what we're doing. A number of things in terms of cross-building are made easier by, and installing are made easier by the multi-arch proposal. So we're very keen to see that happen. I gather there's a small team trying to push it forward, and we'll do our best to help out. Is there any multi-arch people here? No, I know Matt Taggart is at this conference, but he's not here this morning. So those are the things that need doing now. There are a few issues still under debate. The biggest one probably is where to put our metadata. So the thing you need to do to build embedded packages is have extra metadata that says things like, these are docs, so you don't need them, or we don't want to do this and we don't want to do that. And there's two kind of fundamentally different ways of doing this. So there's the way it's done for Debian installer using the UDEB mechanisms and extra information. And there's the stage mechanism of having another directory, which changes the rules normally in the Debian dir, or you could change them in the Debian dir. And the philosophical difference is, do you want to produce a set of packages with the same names as normal Debian packages, but different contents, smaller, maybe a few obscure things missing because you really don't need them? Or do you want to produce a set of different packages with different names? And these let you do different things. So if what you wanted was something that looks like Debian but is in fact a bit shrunk and won't necessarily do the same things, then the stage mechanism is the way to achieve that. The problem with that is that it's not compatible with standard Debian packages. So if we miss out a load of bits and bobs from various things because most of the time you don't need them, the problem is there'll be some package somewhere, which you might then install from normal Debian, which did actually need one of those things we threw away. And because we've got the same name, so we're claiming to be that package, the dependencies will work, but it'll just barf. Now, that doesn't matter unless you're trying to mix packages from Debian main and from the mDebian repository. So that's the problem with that scheme. But it's conceptually simple. Everybody can understand how it works. Maintainers can understand how it works. It's great. So the UDEB system is rather more rigorous, really, in that you get, if a package is different, it's got a different name. And so you have to have different dependencies if you're going to depend on those. So you get a whole separate section of stuff, and you can have the two, you can have the standard Debian packages and the UDEB versions in the same namespace. So if that's what you want to do, which of course is what Debian installer wants to do, that's the way to do that. So at the moment, nobody's really working on building embedded Debian the UDEB way, apart from the DI team with their sort of specialized version of embedded Debian, effectively. So there was quite a lot of argument as Extremadura about which of these things we should be doing. Some people like one, some people like the other. So that's still an open issue. We haven't decided particularly, but right at the moment, people are working on the Debian dir scheme, so that's what'll get done. If anyone believes this is a terrible idea, I mean, the problem with this is that once you start doing something, it tends to collect momentum, and that'll be what we do forevermore. So that's an issue, and I'd be very happy to talk to anyone about it. We can discuss it some more today if anyone is interested. The other thing is getting what we're doing back into Debian main, because the main problem with both Slind and Stage are currently just forks of a snapshot of Debian, which is fine, but you can't maintain that for long. Once you've got a few hundred packages, you're now maintaining the whole of Debian again yourself, which at the moment, with about three people doing it part-time, is hopeless. So we have to get that stuff back into main so that package maintainers look after it by and large. I mean, there isn't a great deal to do, but if they change their rules, which people do occasionally, it would be nice if they change the MDebian rules to correspond if there's any changes needed. So we've got some mind share, I think, still to get, which is one of the reasons why I'm here bullshitting, to persuade people that, you know, embedded stuff matters and Debian ought to work on small devices the same as it works on laptops and servers, and a little bit of effort all round is needed to make that work. We need lots more docs. We're starting to improve that, and now that there's actually stuff to describe which normal maintainers can understand, we've started writing down things people need to do and things we'd like to see. Wow. Right. That's all I've basically got to say. I hope that made sense. If you have taken no interest whatsoever in the embedded sphere before, most of that was probably complete gobbledygook, and I apologise. As I say, I was planning for a boff rather than a talk to loads of people who knew nothing about the subject. I suggest people ask questions. Feel free to ask very stupid questions, because I probably missed out most of the basics at the beginning. Yes, that makes sense. So he was asking whether, as a normal maintainer, he needs to, he's going to have a mechanism for testing his rules within MDebian. And I think the answer is it's not something we've thought about at all. Yes. What you would need to do is install the, so the way Stage works, in order to this with this change Debian dir variable, basically a remarkably small number of tools actually care. You need to teach dpkg about it, deb helper, dpkg cross, and about two other things, cdbs. So basically you would just install the mdebian tools, which in fact should be in main. Well, yeah, all the changes we make are totally invisible unless you change the Debian dir variable. So everything will proceed exactly as it did before. If it isn't set, it defaults to /Debian. Everything works as before. So you'd install the new versions of the tools, which in fact hopefully you would just have, because they'll become the standard versions of the tools. And you just set $Debian dir equals mdebian and build your package. And if it comes out okay, then yes, it works. So, Enship wanted to say something?
Yeah, I would just like to advertise that we actually wrote a document that tells what are the best practices for developers to make their packages cross-compilable and easily usable in embedded, basically including stuff like don't use GIMP to make your logos in the Debian rules.
So there's a number of issues beyond just testing to do with, doing strange things at compile time, like auto-generating your logo by running up a version of GIMP. And you know, if you just put the file in, then that enormously reduces the complexity of cross-compiling. And so people produce all sorts of baroque systems for doing strange things at compile time, which need to run on the target. So, you know, because they never think about the fact that the target might be different from the build machine. You know, it's not something most people are thinking about. So people need to think about that. And obviously it's up to us to explain what the problems are to people who haven't really looked at this issue before. So we've started doing that, and we'll once we're going to fill that out with a lot of examples so that people actually understand the point. Basically, if you have a look at that and go, am I doing any of this bad stuff? That should be all you need to do. And it, you know, it's a one-off thing. You just have a look at your build system and take out anything that's unhelpful, and you know, you never need to change it again. Any more for any more?
Hi, thank you. I'm Mark Allen. I'm a very much newbie in the whole area of embedded processing, and this is primarily for a personal project of mine, and I see an awful lot of hardware being offered, like board, small one-board computers, stackable module computers, and stuff like that. But I am such a newbie. I don't know what I'd want, and I don't know the very basics. Where can I go just to get the very basics, like embedded processing for dummies, and like basic? How do you load once you cross-compile? How do you load it into the machine? Do you use something like JTAG or just what? And how do I find this very basic information? Thank you.
Yes, it's a good question. The problem with the answer to that question is that it depends enormously on the hardware you actually choose. So, for example, how you load in the image you've created depends almost entirely on the bootloader on the hardware you've got. So, you know, it might be supplied with a bootloader you've heard of, like U-boot or Redboot, in which case you use the Redboot and U-boot commands. You know, they're quite, if it's got Ethernet. So usually the very initial stage is indeed JTAG. When you've got a bare thing straight out of the factory, it doesn't do anything. You've usually got to use JTAG to fill up any CPLD or FPGA logic on the board and get an initial bootloader in. But usually the manufacturer have done that. So you as a user hardly ever have to do that unless you're messing about with the bootloader and royally screw things up and turn it into a brick. And there are open JTAG tools, which are increasingly functional. And JTAG has, in fact, expanded beyond its original purpose. So you can also use it for a lot of testing. There's lots of stuff you can do to see whether your hardware is actually wired up the way it's supposed to be wired up, and you can use JTAG for that. But normally, you're only ever dealing with a bootloader to get images loaded in. And each bootloader has its own commands and functionality. And obviously, it depends on the board, whether it's got, if it's just serial or USB or Ethernet. They're the usual ways of uploading things. So that part is always terribly specific. It's almost impossible to generalize. But whoever provides your board will need to tell you how to get stuff on it. Whoever provides the board, you know, whoever you buy the hardware from, will generally tell you how to get stuff onto it. Unless, of course, it's hardware that they weren't intending you to get Linux on, in which case you have to work it out.
So I should ask them,
yeah.
Do they support Linux?
Yes.
The first question I should ask any vendor I deal with, mm-hmm. Do you even know what Linux is and do you support it?
That's right. Your life will be much easier if they do.
Okay.
And for an awful lot of sort of portable devices like PDAs and things, you know, things that come with Pocket PC on them, the vendors won't tell you anything useful about how it works. So in fact, there's very unlikely to be a kernel that works on it because, you know, if they don't, it's extremely difficult to write working kernels for hardware that people won't tell you how it works. Hardware is generally too complicated to reverse engineer in a sensible period of time these days.
Okay.
So, that's right. Mm-hmm. And if you particularly want to put embedded Debian, you could ask them whether they have an embedded Debian port for their hardware. Now, at the moment, the answer will be no from absolutely everybody, with the possible exception of me. But that is coming.
I have a comment. In Japanese embedded industry, Semiconductor doesn't officially support Linux or Debian, but there are many engineers at Semiconductor Company who has enthusiasm and want to support Debian or Linux for their chips. So if you go to officially to Semiconductor Company, you perhaps will get the answer, we don't support Linux. In Hitachi or Renesas Technology in Japan, the famous semiconductor company, the fact is there are many engineers who support Linux.
Right. So you're saying if you ask the company officially, they'll tell you, no, we don't. But in fact, there'll be a mailing list somewhere where you can find an engineer who will help. Yeah. So that is often the case. It's a bottom-up thing. You know, engineers discover that Linux is better, usually before management do. So it is often the case that you can find a helpful person, but that's not the answer you'll get from marketing or sales. There are companies. At the moment, there's a lot to be said. There's a small number of companies who are very focused on, for example, Debian, and provide hardware, and you should support them and buy their stuff, basically, because they are keen to help people like you. So, for example, there's a board called the Loft from Giant Shoulder Inc. Which is a bloke in the States. but he makes some nice ARM-based IXP hardware, which makes quite a nice dev board. You can already put Debian on that. And Balloon Board is something I've been involved with, and I'm in the process of putting embedded Debian on that. And there's other things. I mean, Nokia 770s are well supported by the tools because most of the people doing the work have been using those as dev boards because they work for Nokia. and so on. But basically, I mean, if you come to the mailing list or the channel and say, recommend me some hardware, I need it to do this, that, and the other, that's a good way. You know, people like us have a reasonable overview of what's available. Well, it's increasingly difficult, actually, because there's thousands of things available, but we can certainly tell you the people who are involved.
Okay, I'll talk to that.
Yes, hi. I have a couple of support questions. Like, what are the stage of support for uclibc-based Debian system?
Right, yes. One of the things I forgot to say is that one of the very cool things that Slind does is supports glibc and ulibc builds. So they have cross tools for uclibc as well as glibc via new architectures. And all the packaging assumes you're doing either.
But how do you manage, like, several packages need uclibc patches, specific patches, to be compiled against it?
That's right.
So that's like another delegation to maintainers?
Yes. Okay. Well, so those patches are in Slind at the moment, and the idea is that we'll push those up into packages so that they'll support either. Now, I don't know how contentious that is. I'm not quite sure if Debian's ready yet to support an alternative C library. At the moment, that's not something we do, but it's very much something that embedded people would like to see happen. And those patches are fundamentally utterly unintrusive. You know, if you don't use it, you won't notice it. It doesn't do any harm. Yeah. So I don't think it's going to be too difficult to persuade people to say, you know, please add this. It makes some people's lives easier, and it's not going to do any harm. So yes, that is
okay. That's for libc library. How about the standard C++ library, uclibc++?
The same principles apply, but I don't think anyone's done the work yet.
Okay. And how about BusyBox-based system installation, like the base system based on BusyBox instead of core utils and whatever?
Yeah, so that's done. Does Slind use BusyBox? Yeah, so... Yeah, I think, again, Slind can be set up so the base system is basically just BusyBox, and you don't bother installing a whole load of other packages which it replaces. So, yes, we have that choice.
But that will, like, make some problems with dependency of the rest of the packages?
That's right. So what we're trying to do is define a kind of new essential, because the existing essential is basically okay, and is provided by BusyBox, almost all of it, apart from Perl, which is currently deemed to be essential, and that's really annoying because it's huge. Yeah. And it shouldn't be. So a slightly longer term goal is to get the essential definition moved down a bit to what really is essential.
Okay.
And which basically means kicking Perl out. And then, you know, so if you don't need it, you don't install it. And then basically we can say essential is provided by BusyBox or the stuff that currently provides it.
How will you like manage they need their scripts and stuff like that that like tend to be delicate on BusyBox? How do you plan to manage like init their scripts to initialize stuff and stuff like that on BusyBox based systems?
There's a few things. I mean, a couple of years ago, someone went through all the init scripts and made them ASH compatible rather than using any special bashisms. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that doesn't really do anyone any harm. There's very few things that you actually need to use which aren't in the BusyBox versions of things but are in the full versions of things. So, really, it needs somebody to just go through everything, taking out anything that isn't going to work if you replace Bash with BusyBox. Well, sorry, if you replace or Mount and so on with the basic versions. Mount's probably a difficult example, actually. That's one case where you sometimes do need the fancy features. But, yeah, it's basically a matter of going through and finding anything that doesn't work and fixing it. That's usually utterly painless, but it does need doing.
Okay, perfect. Also, with respect to your, like, you were talking about having different packages providing not the complete set of the full package for embedded systems. Have you analyzed the possibility to have, like, install time mask of which part of the hierarchical file system will you populate, like, do not install everything in your /share/doc.
You're saying just at install time, so you take a standard package, but you just don't put some of the things in.
Exactly.
So the dpackage maintainer has been looking at a mechanism for having manifests so that you can basically have some rules which it will follow at install time. For, as you say, just, you know, don't put anything in user doc. Just miss all those out, which, as you say, gets you quite a lot of what you wanted. So the disadvantage of that system is that you still have to build all that stuff, but you never install it, which wastes a really impressive amount of time. It's quite scary how much of the time you spend building docs with strange doc tools. But clearly, it's a useful feature to have. It's kind of orthogonal, I think, to most of the other stuff. You know, you can do it. You could do it now today, and it will be really useful.
Yeah, but so, you actually already have the full scaled packages built.
Exactly.
So you don't have to rebuild everything.
Precisely. So, yes, it's been looked at. I think Guillaume would welcome some help in terms of actually implementing that. It's a little bit tricky because you know, dpackage is something you don't want to break. So you have got to be careful making changes to that kind of thing. But I believe he has a plan. I'm not sure it's written down in much detail anywhere.
Okay, thank you.
If you're quick. Just a quick.
Just one thing about multi-arch. It seems to me, I read in the mail list that that there's no idea, no plan to actually have a multi-arched user bin or bin directory, which seems a bit strange to me because I think multi-arch would be useful if you use it in conjunction with QEMU to actually allow people who do not have the certain processor architectures to be able to run or test and run their programs on their own PC.
Yes, I agree. We should talk to the multi-arch people. We need to find some. If there's nobody here today. Do we have to stop? There's more questions. I'm sorry we have to stop. So you can come and ask me afterwards. Thank you kindly.